This is your second or third book? Your
second novel.
This novel is about Caddy Blair, who's a journalist in Israel and Palestine, who loses her colleague and her lover, Marcus, during a trip to see a warlord that turns into an ambush. The rest of the novel plays out how she tries to cope with that. Some of the reviews talk about this as swiftly paced as a thriller, an action novel. I actually found that a lot of the action for me is what goes on in Caddy's experience.
Good. You know, I wanted to make a page turner, but I also wanted a lot of introspection on what it means to be covering violence, how her feelings about that change once she becomes a participant instead of just an onlooker.
She kind of struggles with that for much of the novel and ultimately rejects that.
Yes, she does. You know, I think that it's very common for reporters, and certainly I had this experience, to try to keep an emotional distance between themselves and the story. In fact, I think it's really necessary to cover the story in most cases. Caddy has spent a career doing this. That line, that dividing line, becomes more difficult for her to decipher or to maneuver once Marcus is killed.
You've also talked about how what inspired the novel was the suicide of photojournalist Kevin Carter. Could you talk a little bit about that?
The novel is dedicated to Kevin and to journalists like him who cover conflict. I was a reporter in the Middle East when I was sent to Rome, and there I met two South African journalists with whom I became good friends, George Deoth and Roy Mayer. We were in the same hotel, shared drinks and dinner and stories. And we became such good friends that later, when I was in Johannesburg, I stayed with Roy and his family. George Deoth had already been killed about 10 months after I had met him in a conflict in one of the townships. After that happened, I began to look really closely at what was happening with journalists in South Africa, and that's when I became familiar with the Bang Bang Club. This was a group of four photojournalists who got amazing photographs during that period as apartheid was slowly and bloodily ending. They got up close with executions, including white supremacists who were summarily executed when they drove into a black township, and a black man who was burnt by members of another tribe. They were right there and up close for these pictures, often in very frightening and definitely horrifying situations. Kevin, one of the four, Kevin decided to take a break from this by covering starvation conditions in Sudan. Not really a break. For him, it was a change of scenery. He went to a feeding center where victims of civil war fleeing their homes were trying to get to this feeding center. They were starving. And he found a girl, about 6 years old, her head to the ground, unable to pull herself forward another step. And behind her, Nancy, stood a vulture. He spent 20 minutes framing that picture and taking it, waiting to see if the vulture would spread its wings. It never did. After he took the picture, he sank down under a tree, and he was thinking about his own daughter and about the photograph. And he knew he'd gotten something pretty incredible, and one of his colleagues came up and said, "Hey, Kevin, you know, how's it going?" And he said, "I got this amazing picture." His colleague went to try to find it and capture it himself, but by then he could find neither the girl nor the vulture. Kevin's photograph was widely published, and from the New York Times format, it went on to win the Pulitzer. And he was brought here to New York. This is in 1993. And he was praised, and then there were parties. He was also asked repeatedly, "So what happened to that little girl? Did you scoop her up and carry her the last 100 feet or so? Did you shoo away the vulture?" And he had to answer no. He had been caught up in his job of being a journalist. He'd had that emotional distance, but it had interfered with some level of what it means to be human. I know that this line of questioning was difficult for him. He went back to South Africa 2 months after he got the Pulitzer. He parked his red pickup truck in a field where he had played as a child. He brought around the exhaust pipe, and he killed himself. And, you know, Nancy, it would be easy to oversimplify this. The reasons are, I'm sure, many and complex, but he cited in his note the horrors that he had seen that he couldn't get out of his mind, that he had taken pictures of as a photojournalist. I think that reporters who bring these images and these stories home to us pay a price. I wanted to explore some of that.
I remember that picture. I remembered the picture much more rapidly than I remembered that I also knew he had committed suicide.
Yeah, you know, the picture served an important purpose. It allowed people to understand the depths of the tragedy in Sudan. It led to increased donations and some efforts to help out that might not have been made otherwise. At the same time, Kevin was in a position where he was forced to question himself, as many journalists have been. I mean, we try to serve as the pipe through which the story passes. To do that, we stop and go, oh my gosh, and we're horrified. We may not capture the image. We may not get the quote. We may not tell the story.
Is the answer just getting out, as Marcus was struggling with doing and not telling his colleagues?
You know, it's an interesting question. I don't know exactly what the answer is. I've had friends, and we've spoken about this, and some have said, yes, the only answer eventually is to leave and to give up the sort of adrenaline rush of covering the story. Others have said, no, there are ways in which we can cover the story in a more and more humane basis. It's tough. It's not a simple answer. When we're under time constraints, when we're in the middle of trying to get a good story, much like surgeons, I suspect, or you can't stop or you won't get your job done.
Yeah. What I do during the day is I'm a social worker. Much of the time I've spent has been working with people with trauma. We have some very different ways available to us to kind of reconnect. As I was reading your book, I was thinking, that's just not available to someone in the field.
Yeah, you know, I'd love to talk to you more about that. And when you're out there reporting and talking to people, you sit down, you do an interview with them, you become their confidant, their best friend, and then you're gone. You move on to the next story. And that's part of the job, but there's also some moral ambiguity with that, I think.
As a therapist, we deal with that in terms of that's the purpose of the relationship. That seems to be, as you say, much more ambiguous for a journalist. Marcus talks about the theft of lives.
Yes, that's right. And I think I had some of that feeling, too. You know, when you reveal that much of yourself to someone, the normal situation that comes from that is you start to develop a friendship. You know, you go on from this kind of thing. And frequently, you know, I would sometimes never see those people again. I like to think that they were getting something out of it, but I don't know. I don't know. It's a difficult and a complex question, the role that journalists play in the lives of people who are often involved in the most profound moments of their lives. Something has happened to them. They are letting you up close, and then you are moving on.
One of the books that you also have talked about is Anthony Lloyd's My War Gone By, I Miss It So. And I have that here in the studio with me, that extraordinary picture of this young soldier kind of collapsed against a tree that's on the cover.
Anthony Lloyd talks a lot about what war meant to him, how it was, how it made his life seem larger, how it made it seem more important. That's why he loved it so. How it led to connections unlike any other connections he had had. Those kinds of situations make very clear to you, you know, the less relevant issues are clearly weeded out and seen for that. But some of that is what Anthony writes about in his nonfiction book about Bosnia.
He went to the Balkans as an independent. The book kind of starts out with how he managed to get himself there. I watched a bunch of films about a year ago on combat journalism. Welcome to Sarajevo and Harrison's Flowers and Three Kings. There's a documentary on James Nachtwey called War Photographer. Classic 1984 film, The Killing Fields. Veronica Guerin, which, because she was assassinated and dealing with some of the same kind of situations, even though it was the drug war in Ireland. And some themes emerged that really came up again as I was reading your novel. This kind of idea of what does journalism have to do with the export of democracy, how war and violence themselves are changing, how women get portrayed in a culture of journalism at war, professional ethics. There seems to be this obligatory scene. You see it right at the beginning of Harrison's Flowers. Someone is getting an award for their work, and then in the men's room has a fight with another journalist who says, "You sold out." In writing your novel, were you reacting at all to any of that film work that had also been done?
You know, I don't know that I really was. I think I was actually, I was trying to respond. In The War Photographer, you know, James Nachtwey says, you know, why do we do what we do? Gives the answer that is true, but is a somewhat limited answer. We do it because we want to show this to people we believe in letting them see. And that is absolutely true. But it's like the first layer of it. And I guess I wanted to explore fictionally the adrenaline rush, the draw to get closer and closer to the story.
You call it addictive.
That's right, that addictive rush. Yeah. And I wanted to write a novel. My fellow journalists would feel, yes, you got us. That's what I was seeking for. And at the same time, I wanted to look at some of the things that I hadn't really talked to my colleagues about, but that troubled me personally, the moral ambiguity of some of the interviews, some of the relationships that we form. Caddy refers to how she wishes she could have a phone book that was full of friends instead of contacts, mm-hmm. and the contact
yeah.
numbers, you know.
It's interesting that you wanted other journalists to feel like they were understood. One of the things that you say about the terrorists, or one of the things Caddy says, is that they have this need to be understood.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of the identification with your subject as a journalist, do you think?
Yeah, and you know, I think that in some ways that that's a basic human need.
Mm-hmm.
When I would do interviews and would these questions would start to niggling rise up to
mm-hmm.
me, I would tell myself that people wanted to be really listened to
yeah.
without judgment and
mm-hmm.
really understood. That was my role. Whoever I was interviewing, my point was not to judge, but to just truly try to listen and understand as if I were them.
Uh-huh. There are a group of women that Caddy does know. Her relationship with the culture she's in gets played out through a group of women.
Mm-hmm.
The crazy woman on the street, Anya, and mm-hmm. her friend Yale, who works in a bank, and
mm-hmm.
was there a reason that you kind of chose a circle of women? There are no other women journalists, no colleagues.
No, she's working primarily with men.
Yeah.
Which was pretty much my experience. I mean, there are women, more and more women there, uh-huh. but they are still the minority, and particularly in tough stories. And yet there's that need for companionship. She has a relationship with a man, Goronsky, who sort of pushes her to consider the moral issues of responding to Marcus's death, who suggests that revenge may be a moral choice and that
mm-hmm.
to do nothing may be amoral or immoral. In terms of friendship, Yael, who is a good friend of hers, is allowed to be the voice, which is saying, what are you doing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a new biography of Martha Gellhorn published about a year ago. What really struck me was that at the age of 83, she was still trying to get some paper to send her to the Gulf War. She'd been covering wars since the 1930s.
Yeah, I went to Afghanistan last year
yeah.
in the spring. You know, I don't want to go to Iraq, but there's something very addictive about covering war.
Uh-huh.
But there's also something very addictive about sinking into a culture and being able to drift among it and ask questions, really personal
mm-hmm.
questions,
mm-hmm.
oftentimes